I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who lived to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're standing by for a couple of things. We're waiting for the bail hearing for Sean Diddy Combs. We're also waiting for the House to vote on the big, not-so-beautiful bill. And if any of that happens while we're on the air between now and 4 o'clock, we'll pass it on to you. I'm Scoot on the air, a lot going on. Talk radio is a great place to instantly react to breaking news. And right before we went on the air this morning, Sean Diddy Combs was found not guilty of the most serious charges, but guilty of prostitution. So did the time that he spent in jail, was that enough? Will he do more jail time? Sentencing is still coming up. Looks like he's going to get out on bail between now and the sentencing. And we'll be talking about that. We're continuing to get your reaction to what happened, the not guilty verdict on the most serious charges. He was found guilty of the two lesser charges, and that is a transportation to engage in prostitution. If you want to join us this afternoon, the Open Heart Jewelers talk and text line is 504-260-1870. And then I've got to go back and fill in the blank with a couple of calls that we had yesterday. And when I'm on the air and I'm challenged with something, you know, I can only have so much information in front of me. So I went back and double checked on a couple of things that I want to respond to, a couple of the things that came up yesterday. And they're topical topics. So it makes sense to do that. Before I get to your calls, let me share with you this new poll that is out. It's a new Gallup poll. And the poll finds that 58% of Americans surveyed said that they are just very proud to be an American. 58%. But that's down from 91% in 2002. And that was months following 9/11 when that poll was taken. 65% 2 years ago. So 65% 2 years ago, 65% were proud to be Americans. Now it's 58%. Now, Fox News has a different poll, and you know, sometimes polls are different, but for the most part, polls are the same. But Fox News will have a whole different spin on this and everything else, really. There's quite a generational divide when it comes to patriotism. 58% of millennials are very proud to be an American. 41% of Gen Z say they're very or extremely proud to be an American. And the number goes up to 71% of Gen X and 75% of boomers are proud to be Americans. Now, while these numbers are high, still some of these numbers are hitting a low point in history for the number of Americans who are very proud to be an American. All right, let's get to a couple of your calls. Let's go to Janice in New Orleans. Hey, Janice.
Yes, I had a couple of things I wanted to say. First of all, I had sent you something the other day that really had me kind of thinking a little bit, but I read something today that clarified it a bit, but I'm still not sure I agree with it.
Okay.
What it is, I had read yesterday that Trump was considering or might float the idea of deporting U.S. citizens. So
yeah.
That was sort of like a slap in the face. I'm thinking, wait a minute. I'm a U.S. citizen. You know, what is he talking about? Well, today I read something, but I'm not completely sure I'm down with it. That would be like deporting Dinesh D'Souza, Bridget Gabriel. I read that he's speaking about people that actually immigrated to the United States.
Yeah, naturalized citizens.
If you came here the right way, yeah. If you didn't do it just crossing over our border, if you did it legally, did it the right way and everything, and you do something, I'm not so sure you should be deported or just treated like you and me, you know, just treated like a normal United States.
Well, Janice, I agree with you. I think it's deplorable that Donald Trump is talking about, you know, because the whole effort behind mass deportations is people who did not come to this country in the right way. People who immigrated here and became U.S. citizens, like Elon Musk, they should be treated like citizens. I mean, if you commit a crime, then you should be treated like U.S. citizens and you shouldn't be deported. And I think that this is
just a
horrible, horrible concept to deport naturalized citizens. I mean, that's just horrible.
It's something I know you're definitely not going to agree with me on, but I'm not going to fight with you, okay?
Okay.
I don't want to raise my voice. You've been very nice to me lately.
I will be very nice to you. No matter how irritated you make me, I will not raise my voice.
I want to respond in the same way to you. Yeah, you're making me laugh.
I've been married, so I know how to try not to raise my voice, even if somebody irritates me.
Yes, okay. I know exactly what you're doing right now, and it's hilarious. It's funny as hell.
But I promise I'm not going to
raise my voice.
But
here's the thing that we disagree on.
Okay.
I am not down with, and if I was the mayor of the city, people would not be doing bike rides showing any nakedness whatsoever. If you're in the French Quarter, around Mardi Gras and stuff, people up on the balconies and all, and showing their body parts, or men showing any of theirs and stuff, the police will generally arrest you. So I just think that doing anything nude in the street should be, you know, subject to possible arrest. I really do. So I know we disagree on that. But like I said, I don't want to raise my voice. I don't want to fight with you because you've been extremely nice to me lately. And you're like a different Scoot. And I
it's because, you know why? It's because you're a different Janice.
Well, I'm trying to be nice to you. Scoot, look, I never meant to raise my voice. I truly didn't. I mean that. I truly mean it. It's just that sometimes when I would be talking, you'd sort of like cut me off or talk over me, and that's when I would raise my voice.
It was because you would say something and you wouldn't stop talking for me to comment. But that's all in the past.
I'm sorry about that. Okay, yeah, you have a right.
But as far as that naked bike ride is concerned, Janice, let me tell you something for true. I'm kidding.
I know, it's funny. Okay, bye.
All right, have a good day. Let's go to Jack in River Ridge. Hey, Jack.
Scoot, how you doing?
Good.
Scoot, I want to talk about what some of the Republican senators who signed this bill said about it. Okay, in May, Joni Ernst was having a town hall meeting when people questioned, you know, after people saw what the Congressional Budget Office said about the bill, they were questioning her about it. And she basically said, you know, everybody's got to die, you know, because they were asking about insurance going away.
Yeah.
Okay, then McConnell yesterday, a reporter told him that up to 200,000 Kentuckians will lose their health care. And he said they'll get over it. Josh Hawley on Monday from Missouri, he basically said, how can we sign this bill? It's going to take people off of health care. It's going to take food away from children. And all it's doing is giving money to corporations and billionaires. And then yesterday, I'm sure everybody, I know both of y'all saw the thing with Murkowski. You know, where she was criticized by the other Kentucky senator, the other Republican. She was criticized by him. A reporter asked her about it, and she said, this is my interpretation. She basically said, the bill's going to pass anyway, so I got what I could for my state.
Yeah.
Is that the way you took it?
Yeah, you know, I'm bothered by a lot of things about the bill. I'm bothered by the callous inhumanity when it comes to talking about people dying or you know, and everybody who says that has their health care set for them. They're set. Their families are set. But people are going to die as a result of losing their health care. And it seems like there are other areas we can cut back on.
I mean, what do you think their plan is? Because if the CBO's prediction comes out, they're not going to I can't imagine that they would get reelected. Do you think they just don't care? They've gotten enough. They don't need to get reelected again?
Well, you know, voters have a short memory, and what they'll all try to do is do something right before the election, and people will not remember some things, although I think it's going to be kind of hard to forget that you lost your Medicaid. It's going to be pretty hard to forget that. It's going to be pretty hard to forget that, you know, you had to pay for health care when you were getting health care taken care of by the government. And some people need it. Of course, there are people who abuse the system. My God, the richest people abuse the system. So that is something that just humans do in situations. Not everybody does it. So I think it's a bad situation, Jack. And I think a lot of people are going to. I think a lot of people are going to face very angry voters as a result of this bill, and sucking up to Donald Trump is going to hurt a lot of people when it comes to Election Day, and we'll see what happens.
Well, Scoot, all I'll say before I get out is if anybody doesn't believe what I just said, all of that stuff was said on camera. If you want to see it, it's out there.
No, it
they,
is.
They all
yeah.
said, yeah. So, yeah. Thank you, Scoot.
All right, Jack, I appreciate the call. Yeah, you too. Let's go to Ian with some of your text messages.
I got text messages, but I'm also old enough to remember death panels.
Yeah.
You know, when the ACA was still being worked out in Congress, and Sarah Palin and everybody else, Michelle Bachmann, and they all come out and said, oh, giving people health care, giving them access to health insurance is the same as putting them in front of a panel of people who are going to decide who gets to live and who gets to die.
That's right.
Wow. And now here we are, taking health care away from people and saying, well, we're all going to die someday. I mean, it's sick. It's really sick.
Well, and the people who say that are not worried because, again, they have the coverage. If their coverage was in doubt, they'd have a different decision. And once again, it's a reminder that politicians don't represent the people who put them in office. And there are going to be some Republican voters who are going to die, too.
I'm sure this is not the way most Republican voters would like it to be, but elected members of Congress that are in the Republican Party should just go ahead and make their campaign slogan, I got mine, so F you.
Yeah, exactly. That would be great. That would be truthful. Yeah, that would be truthful.
To the text line, Left Lane Ryder is listening today, and he says, can we just all agree that people who actually need Medicaid should have it, but the people who are lazy or refuse to work and they just live off the government shouldn't? It really seems like a common sense issue to me.
It is a common sense issue, but sometimes bureaucracies don't recognize common sense. Sometimes bureaucracies are so, because of the nature of a bureaucracy, everything is set up. It's black and white. It's cut and dry. It's this or it's this. There's little consideration for human decisions. It's either this or this. You either fit into this category or that category, and it doesn't take into consideration common sense.
Also, too, I think it's important to point out that if you are found to have received Medicaid dollars, you don't receive Medicaid dollars, the hospital receives the dollars. If you are the beneficiary of Medicaid money and you are not eligible for that, they come back for that money. They don't just let you walk away. It's the same thing with, all sorts of other things, food stamps or, I forget, Big Frida got in trouble for something like this a little while ago. It was taken, I think, unemployment benefits that they weren't supposed to have. The government comes back and tries to get that money from them. So it's not like it just, there's $110 million in Medicaid, funded beneficiary that wasn't accounted for. That money, they try to get that money back.
But there are people who are cheering for this callous mentality, and they're cheering for it, thinking that they're all safe and protected. But the very people who are cheering are some of the ones who are going to be impacted.
I think also, too, this asks a lot of us as Americans to think about this when we're talking about this issue. A dollar of preventative care is way better than $100 of emergency room
care. That's right.
If you've got people that are homeless, people that are migrants, people in all these sort of, vulnerable, disadvantaged groups that cannot and will not ever get private health care coverage, there is a vehicle for them to get Medicaid. And that means they get to go see the doctor before they come in with a bleeding tumor in their breast.
Right.
And, we still end up paying for that. So, it's I don't know why you wouldn't want to give people a dollar's worth of preventative care today, even if, maybe there's a couple people that could be going to work but aren't, or somebody that, once was on disability and now they aren't anymore. The fact of the matter is, if they have no health care at all, the costs for that down the line are going to be profound.
Yeah, that's right.
Much more money than we're going to spend on it right now. All right, a couple more quick ones. Kirk is listening today about P. Diddy. And we talked about how Diddy was turning around to his family in the courtroom and saying, pray for me, whatever. Kirk says, well, why should Diddy be embarrassed? in front of his children. They're young adults. You said that his swinging or freak-off behavior is just a different lifestyle. So why should he be embarrassed now?
Well, I mean, I guess he's not. But, you know, when it's your parent, I mean, it's really a little different. I mean, you know, are you going to tell me that if you saw porn, and, you know, there are a lot of conservatives who watch porn. I mean, you watch porn, you watch people having sex. What if it was your parents? You're going to tell me that that's not a little different? That was the only point that I was making. And if you don't understand that, well, I don't care.
Yep. Here's a text that says prostitution, whether you're buying or selling, is illegal. So how does only Diddy get prosecuted? You cannot release other prostitutes just because they're not famous. Diddy did not get equal protection or due process under the Constitution.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know all the inside workings of this particular case. So I don't know. But I mean, a lot of, you know, look, a lot of people get away with prostitution. And, you know, there's a lot of prostitution that is subtle, but there are men, and it's always been this way, who believe that if they spend a certain amount of money on women, they're entitled to sex. I did a study on date rape years ago, and it's amazing how many men think that if they spend a certain amount of money on a woman, they're entitled to sex. That's their mentality.
The U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York is not going to go after sex workers. That is extraordinarily rare for a sex worker to catch a federal charge. That's just not what they're there to do. That, you know, that work is done by local jurisdictions. So, you know, it's up to their discretion. The U.S. attorney said, you know, I'm not going to prosecute these people. We're not even bringing charges. We don't even have, you know, maybe sufficient evidence to prove that they committed a crime. So we're not going to waste our resources trying to drag them in front of a judge when, in fact, it was the threat of violence from Diddy and his friends that coerced them into these situations in the first place where, oh, yeah, you had to be in a freak off for 72 hours. And then I threw a couple, you know, $100 bills at you. Like, that's...
Yeah,
my, to jail for that?
My point is, you know, don't be so critical of prostitutes if you're a guy and you take women out and you think if you spend time and spend some money on them that you're entitled to sex. I mean, that's prostitution, too.
And in fact, if Diddy was filming these events, then, you know, maybe there's a lane open for him where he's making pornography and that's not illegal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not illegal if you're filming it. In a way, I mean, I'm sure there's paperwork involved at some point, but, you know, you get my
point. I mean, again, as I brought up earlier in the show, I think that that there are a lot of Americans who wanted Diddy to be guilty because they disagree with the sex. They heard about this wild sex and the men and the women and the baby oil and all this. They heard about all of this, and they didn't know the details of racketeering and sex trafficking. They just thought he should be guilty because he was having this kind of sex. And it just points out how retentive Americans can be when it comes to some sex. I think they were judgmental of the wild sex that was taking place. And, you know, it's not illegal to have wild sex.
Two more quick ones, including a text that I'm really glad got in here because we can't move forward without acknowledging this. The text says other prostitutes cut deals to testify. They were going after the big fish. This is a common law practice. If you got two criminals, I'm no longer reading from the text message. If you got two people that committed crimes, you'll often offer immunity to one of them in exchange for them testifying to the other. This happens all the time, all the time, all the time. So just because that happened in this case doesn't mean Diddy did not get due process or equal protection under the law. Now, here's a text message that says many folks who wanted Diddy to be guilty of sex crimes and trafficking are actually just jealous that they didn't have the wild sex lives of mother or adventurous humans. These uptight folks just need to come out of their conservative shells and go get laid. The world would be a better place without all the religious and moral hang-ups about sex.
You can buy baby oil at any Walgreens. Any CV, you can buy. You can go to any store and buy baby oil.
Don't use baby oil. We have to keep saying this. Baby oil is not body safe.
No, and
for
listen. It will ruin your sheets. It's hard to get off. I mean, you got to shower a long time to get baby oil off. Well, that's what I heard.
That's what I heard.
All right. It's a hot summer day. It's Wednesday, July 2nd. And I hope to God you're in some air conditioning. If you're not, man, God bless those of you who are in and out of trucks delivering stuff. God bless those of you who are just dealing with the heat. Thank you for what you do. I'm Scoot, and we'll be right back on WWL.
I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who live to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, on the Scoot on the Air calendar. Oh, I remember this movie. On this day in 1991, it was Ice Cube's first acting role alongside Cuba Gooding Jr. The movie Boys in the Hood was released. And this was just a monumental movie. John Singleton was 23 years old. He was the writer and director. And I remember seeing this movie, and it opened my eyes to a lot of things that, you know, growing up in a suburban Metairie, I was not familiar with. And I think sometimes we need to admit that we just don't know. We just don't know everything. And there are people, there are young people growing up in neighborhoods that are totally different from the neighborhood that you grew up in. And you can't possibly understand their lives. But people do things a lot of times based on how they were raised and their environment. And look, this is great news. We haven't had a chance to get to it today. I hope we get to it tomorrow. But juvenile crime in New Orleans is down significantly. And this is really good. I mean, I feel it. I mean, I hear the news every day. I'm in touch with the news every single day. And I see that juvenile crime is not as prominent in the news as it has been. And this is really good news. And the five incarcerated youth, all black youths that I talked to in the correction center here in New Orleans, you know, they all got caught and they have all changed their minds about who they are and what they're going to do when they get out. Now, you know, you could say, well, they're just saying that now. Well, maybe so, but maybe not. I mean, you weren't there. I was there. I was looking them in the eye. And I'm not a naive person, and I could tell that there was real sincerity, their body language and how they said it. I could tell that they were, you know, very seriously going to change their minds. Hey, I want to touch on a couple of things that happened yesterday, and Ian was part of this this conversation. Well, first of all, before we get to the caller, there was a conversation yesterday about Donald Trump wearing the cap Gulf of America. And he signed an executive order declaring the Gulf of Mexico, the name changed to Gulf of America. And I think this is nothing but a Donald Trump ego trip. And I said that I had looked it up and the coastline of Mexico is greater than the coastline of the United States. And a caller said, no, that's not correct. And he wasn't arguing. He was just providing the information that the coastline of the U.S. along the Gulf is greater than the coastline of Mexico along the Gulf. So I looked this up again after the show. And according to Wikipedia, the Mexican coast is 1,400 miles. The U.S. coast is 1,700 miles. So based on that information, the caller was right. But then there are two other sources. Another source says the U.S. coast is 1,631 miles. The Mexican coast along the Gulf is 1,743 miles. So there's a source that says the Mexican coast is greater. Google Maps says the U.S. coast is less than 1,630 miles. The Mexican coast is more than 2,040 miles. So there's two sources that say the Mexican coast is greater. But aside from all of that, here's why it was a superficial ego trip for Donald Trump to want to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf of Mexico was named the Gulf of Mexico in the 1550s. In the 1550s. And Donald Trump this year on Inauguration Day changed the name to restore American pride. You don't have to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico to restore American pride. It's not even part of the solution to restoring American pride. It's a stupid ego trip. And this was named the Gulf of Mexico in the 1550s, and it doesn't need to be changed to the Gulf of America. But Google Maps and Apple Maps have officially changed it to the Gulf of America. All right, so a caller yesterday, Bob, criticized me from Mississippi, called it, and he criticized me for saying that the Idaho shooter was linked to a white nationalist group in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Well, there's a problem with that. I never said that. Because I have been to Coeur d'Alene, because of the fact that white nationalist groups populate Coeur d'Alene and that area, I simply wondered if the shooter in the Idaho fire case might have been motivated by those groups. I brought it up as a possibility. And then Bob said, no, I think Bob said it was the reason that the shooter shot the firefighters is he was mad because he was rejected after applying to be a firefighter. And I said, I don't know that that's true. And I looked it up and it's not true. Now, I reported that the grandfather speculated that his grandson might have been rejected by the fire department. And that was the case. So here's a guy calling up, and he is absolutely certain that I'm wrong and he's right, but he has misinformation. Because the grandfather thought that maybe that's what happened with his son, but we don't know for sure. So, again, misinformation. And then there was another caller that just kind of just talked about Coeur d'Alene being a wonderful place. And look, I went back and there's just so much documentation about a white nationalist, white supremacist mentality that thrives in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Everybody there doesn't buy into this. There were people arrested at a gay pride parade. There was an incident where the University of Utah women's basketball team was playing in an NCAA tournament in Spokane, which is not far from Coeur d'Alene. And they were in. They were walking from the hotel to dinner, and a truck pulls up, and a bunch of guys in the truck just shout out the N-word at the Utah basketball team, Utah women's basketball team. Then when they were leaving the restaurant, going back to the hotel, two trucks show up, and everybody in the two trucks is shouting out the N-word. That's the mentality that prevails. That's the mentality that gets attention in Coeur d'Alene. It's a shame. Because they're good people who live in Coeur d'Alene, like they're good people who live everywhere. But make no mistake about it, there was reason for me to speculate about the possibility that this guy was linked to right-wing radical groups. My concern is that we may not know the truth, because it is possible that maybe, because there's so much finger-pointing going on, that the officials are not telling us about any association with a white supremacist group or a white nationalist group in Coeur d'Alene, because they don't want the media to know that this guy was linked to the groups, because they're trying to protect him. They're trying to protect Republicans. They're trying to protect the right, so that this guy's not associated with the right. But even if he is, that doesn't mean that all of the right is wrong. So, you know, and then the conversation came up about Stephen Miller. And I did more research on Stephen Miller, and Stephen Miller has so many things in his life that have indicated that he is a racist. He is a top advisor to Donald Trump. You can say he's Donald Trump's brain. The whole immigration thing is all coming from Stephen Miller. And there is countless research about how he believes, and he's trying to sell this idea that immigration is part of the great replacement theory. This idea that immigrants are replacing white Americans. Now, I don't know what the percentage is. And even, look, I want the closed border. I mean, I want the border only for people who come across legally. But even when people were flooding into this country, the amount of people coming into this country illegally is such a minute amount compared to the, 330, 340 million people we have in this country. That they're not replacing white people, but this is the fear. This is a tactic that has been used by Republicans for a long time. The tactic of creating fear that either blacks or brown people are going to replace white people, and white people start freaking out over it. If you're white, you have no reason to freak out. Nobody's replacing you. And if you buy into this, then chances are you're hung up in the right-wing radical media echo chamber, and you're being told to be afraid. I'm telling you, you're not being replaced. And I'm right, because you're not being replaced. It doesn't mean that there aren't situations where white people are not, every white person doesn't, have an advantage, and everybody doesn't have advantage. There are people, just because it's a human situation, there are people who don't get what they want, who might feel like they're outdated. Well, it's up to you to kind of do the best you can to keep up, but it doesn't mean you're going to get every opportunity you want. But for the most part, white people in America are not being replaced. And if you buy into that, then you're simply buying into the fear that the right is trying to use to brainwash you. All right, we got to get to a break here. On the Scoot on the Air rock culture calendar, on this day in, what was the year? This day in 1966. Let me find the date. Let me be accurate about this. Yeah, on this day in 1966, Strangers in the Night, Frank Sinatra, was the number one song in America. It was in a movie called A Man Could Get Killed. And this was amazing because this song, I think, replaced Paperback Writer by the Beatles as the number one song in the country. In 1966, the Beatles were still very, very prominent, but Strangers in the Night made it to number one. We'll be right back on WWL.
I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who live to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Scoot on the Air calendar, on this day in 1962, Jimi Hendrix received an honorable discharge from the Army, serving a little over a year of his three-year commitment in the Army. His supervisor said he was unsuitable to be a good soldier, and he was more interested in his guitar than a rifle, so they gave him an honorable discharge, and they just realized he wasn't going to be a good soldier. I'm Scoot, and let's go to Derek in the Irish Channel. Hey, Derek.
Hey, Scoot. How you doing today?
Good.
Okay, I just got a few points. So, one, the first thing I called about was the Diddy trial, with the Puff Daddy trial. Yeah. So, I'm going to hear people saying he got off because of money. It wasn't that. The prosecutors put together one of the worst cases ever. When I looked at all the videos and listened to stuff, the charges that they brought against him and the case that they put together was one of the worst cases. And I don't even, I'm maybe thinking maybe they sabotaged their own case just to get him free. They put together a case that was not going to get a conviction. And with the different charges, with the prostitution, and then they had the assault and stuff, those things shouldn't have been in federal court. Those was criminal charges that should have been in a state court. But they try to clump them all together to get a federal conviction on racketeering, which they put together one of the worst cases ever. It was just botched from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, I really thought that they might have been too aggressive in what they were going after. And, you know, they were too vulnerable to the idea that this was consensual. And, you know, it wasn't about abusing somebody. And he was obviously a very abusive person. It wasn't about that. It was about the wild sex parties. And the jury heard testimony that we didn't hear because the news media is only going to play the sexiest, most outrageous testimony because that gets our attention. The mundane testimony that might have really swayed the jury, you know, we didn't hear about that. That didn't turn out to be sound bites. So we didn't get a fair view of the case in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, we didn't. And with the sex parties and stuff, I haven't attended none, and I won't be going to no sex parties. Sex parties are not illegal.
That's right.
It was just, if they were not illegal, everybody that was there because on their own accord. They went because they wanted to be involved in that stuff. Now, what happened behind closed doors, what he was doing, striking people and kicking people and doing those, that was two different kinds of cases.
Yep.
It wasn't a federal case. They should have put together a case that was solely going to pinpoint what federal crimes he committed that attained to racketeering. And the other thing with Donald Trump, with the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't change the name of New Mexico to New United States.
No, let's not give him any ideas, Derek.
Half of the United States was Mexico at one time.
Yeah.
We either took it or we bought it for a lower price, but those people that they keep saying sending back to Mexico, their ancestors was actually part of the United States. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not against those people being sent back. I'm against everybody having the opportunity to have the due process and a fair day in court. But every person in the United States in some kind of way came here illegally. Either you was illegally stolen and brought here, or you illegally came here when it was a bunch of Irish and a bunch of Europeans that came illegal. So they have only a handful of people that are natural citizens to the United States.
The Native Americans didn't actually invite us. Derek, look, you make very astute observations, and I appreciate the call. I got to get to a break here, but look, there's three sources. I checked three sources last night. And two of the sources say that the border with Mexico and the Gulf of Mexico is greater than the border with the United States. So I'm going with the two out of three. And that was my original impression. If you look at them visually, it might look like there's more on the United States part. But when you look at that deep, I guess it's the Bay of Campeche. When you look at that deep crest in the coast of Mexico, I mean, that's what extends the border with Mexico and the Gulf of Mexico. But again, it was named in 1550. So why do we have to change it? It was an ego trip. It was a simplistic gesture to the MAGA people. Many of them just, you know, were just like, yeah, man, America, man, we're great. Yeah, this is us, man. We got the Gulf. It's ours. That was the mentality. And that's what President Trump pandered to. It was just going down to the lowest common denominator. All right, on the Scoot calendar, on this day in 1958, Paramount Pictures released Elvis Presley's King Creole. Much of that movie was done right here in New Orleans. I'm Scoot, and we'll be back on WWL. All right, Sports Talk is coming up next. I want to thank Program Director and Brand Manager Diane Newman, Assistant Program Director and Brand Manager, Senior Producer of our show, Ian Hoke, Market Manager Dan Barron, News Anchor Chris Miller, Traffic with Courtney P. As always, I thank you for being part of the show. I'm Scoot. Have a great afternoon. Love you, New Orleans.
I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who live to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.